Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It is 9:46. Michael O'Hanlon, friend of the program, and he and I are practically twins. We're about the same age. We're both Patriots. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. I am in my 38th year of my leave of absence from Ithaca College. Michael, we're almost twins.
I thought you were about to say we're both Patriot fans, which I'm not, by the way.
No, Patriots.
Yeah, I like that better.
Yeah, that's better. All right, serious question, Michael, and this is your field. You know the defense field much better than we do. Venezuela, Iran, or North Korea, what's the biggest threat to us right now?
North Korea, because they have nuclear weapons, and 200,000 Americans live in South Korea, and another almost 100,000 in Japan. Those countries are within range of current North Korean capability. And also, of course, the city of Seoul, more generally, has about 25 million people in that megalopolis, and they're all within range of various things from North Korea. And so even though Kim Jong-un and President Trump are getting along at the moment, we see worrying signs that things are getting worse. We don't see any progress on the nuclear file, and there's always the danger of a return back to the days of 2017 when I think war was, you know, becoming closer. And, you know, the old line about, you know, I mean, once people have started to be friendly, or I guess in romance and literature, we talk about, you know, lovers who have a falling out.
Right.
There can be a level of anger and lashing out and a repercussion associated with that, that if Kim Jong-un and or Donald Trump get to the point where they feel that their rapprochement of 2018 has been abused by the other and there's no trust anymore, things could again be very dangerous. So I would have to say North Korea.
Iran, of course, is quite upset with us. We have made appropriate and inappropriate efforts, in my view, to shut down their economy. Venezuela is in our hemisphere. We don't know if that's a hot spot with the right person set to take power or if somebody else needs to be involved. All of this is with an acting defense secretary. Is that a problem?
Well, I like Patrick Shanahan. I think he's an able guy, you know, and it's hard to answer your question just on its own terms without putting this in the context of the overall Trump administration, which does a lot of things in an unorthodox way. Some of that's okay. Some of that usefully challenges conventional wisdom. But I don't see any benefit to having people. You're essentially lowering their stature and their clout when you keep them in an acting role. And, you know, when Mr. Shanahan might go around the world, when he testifies, no one's quite sure if he's got this job just for a few more weeks. No one's quite sure if he has the president's full confidence. So I don't think it allows him to be as effective. And so I think the Trump administration should view things in those terms, that they're actually disempowering their own people with this sort of approach. Having said that, I still like the guy and think he's doing basically a perfectly adequate caretaker job so far. I just don't like the idea of operating permanently in caretaker mode.
And the North Korea piece again, do we go back to square one with this? Because they said they wouldn't test. They're testing. Technicalities in the arrangement don't matter to me. They're throwing up projectiles. So are we back to zero when it comes to trying to strike a deal with them to not do this?
No, I think they're trying to make us worry that we could go back to zero or worse because, as you point out, there are some technicalities and nuance here. They're using short-range missiles, which were never our preeminent concern, and the moratorium that we cared about was on nuclear testing and long-range missile testing and perhaps medium-range testing because that can hit U.S. facilities in Japan or Guam. The shorter-range stuff is not nice, but the North Koreans are mostly trying to get our attention and implicitly signal, I believe, that things could get worse. And that if the talks continue to stalemate or go backward, then they can keep upping the ante. Because we know from what Kim Jong-un said to President Trump in Hanoi in February that the North Koreans are suffering under the sanctions. And so for them, the current situation is not good enough. For Donald Trump, it's almost partly good enough. He hasn't solved the problem, but he has good talking points that he's reduced the North Korean threat. Anytime he and world leader are having good, friendly conversation, there's unlikely to be a war. The North Koreans aren't doing long-range missile testing or nuclear testing. So Trump already has some talking points he can use to justify and defend his policy. But for the North Koreans, their economy is still hurting badly. And so I think they're trying to gradually lash out more and more to get our attention, maybe get the United States to think of some more creative approaches that could lead to a compromise.
Last question. Russia has influence in all the areas we're talking about. Is there any possibility in your world or mine that they will play a positive role benefiting both of us?
Well, they play a positive role when it suits their interest. And that sounds like a way to evade your question, but it's really not, because even in the worst of times, even in 2014, after they seized Crimea and started causing aggression in the Donbas region of Ukraine, even in 2008, when they took part of North Georgia and threatened to overthrow the president there, we still cooperated with them on Iran sanctions, on North Korea policy, at various times on getting supplies into Afghanistan through former Soviet republics or over Russian territory through its airspace. They're very, very capable of compartmentalization. And they do want to overall weaken the United States and its broader role in the world, but that doesn't mean they have to apply that philosophy each and every time an acute crisis arises. And they want to maintain some degree of friendliness with Donald Trump, even if the rest of the United States is pretty upset with them. So for those reasons, I think there's always a chance they could be helpful, but we should not assume it. And we should also be asking, well, how could they be being devious? Because they're obviously very good at that, too. My bottom line guess is that overall on North Korea policy, they've historically been pretty supportive. They've supported UN Security Council resolutions, for example, that impose sanctions. They probably will continue that, but I'm always second guessing myself because I'm really not sure.
Michael O'Hanlon, you know better than we do. I always appreciate your insight, and thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Michael O'Hanlon, the Brookings Institution.